forever over the nations of the earth. But the proud claim of perpetual and indefeasible dominion, which her soldiers could no longer maintain, was firmly asserted by her statesmen and lawyers, whose opinions have been sometimes revived and propagated in the modern schools of jurisprudence. After Rome herself had been stripped of the imperial purple, the princes of Constantinople assumed the sole and sacred scepter of the monarchy, demanded as their rightful inheritance the provinces which had been subdued by the consuls or possessed by the Caesars, and feebly aspired to deliver their faithful subjects of the West from the usurpation of heretics and barbarians. The execution of this splendid design was in some degree reserved for Justinian. During the five first years of his reign, he reluctantly waged a costly and unprofitable war against the Persians, till his pride submitted to his ambition, and he purchased, at the price of £440,000, the benefit of a precarious truce, which, in the language of both nations, was dignified with the appellation of the Endless Peace. The safety of the East enabled the emperor to employ his forces against the Vandals, and the internal state of Africa afforded an honourable motive and promised a powerful support to the Roman arms.
As his general in the African campaign, Justinian was fortunate in having a loyal and proved commander, one Belisarius. For Gibbon, Belisarius is something of a heroic figure, reminiscent of the earlier and more splendid days of the Roman Empire, when military prowess was joined with personal nobility and integrity. Belisarius subdued the African outpost of Justinian's empire and proceeded then to invade Italy, heading for the ancient prize, Rome, then in the hands of the Goths, under the leadership of Vitiges. Against Belisarius, Vitiges had assembled an army of 150,000 at Ravenna, but Belisarius entered Rome unopposed. Vitiges laid siege to the empire's ancient capital for more than a year, in 536 AD.
Whatever fancy may conceive, the severe compass of the geographer defines the circumference of Rome within a line of 12 miles and 345 paces. And that circumference, except in the Vatican, has invariably been the same from the triumph of Aurelian to the peaceful but obscure reign of the modern popes. But in the day of her greatness, the space within her walls was crowded with habitations and inhabitants, and the populous suburbs that stretched along the public roads were darted like so many rays from one common centre. Adversity swept away these extraneous ornaments, and left naked and desolate a considerable part even of the Seven Hills. Yet Rome, in its present state, could send into the field above 30,000 males of a military age, and notwithstanding the want of discipline and exercise, the far greater part, inured to the hardships of poverty, might be capable of bearing arms for the defence of their country and religion. The prudence of Belisarius did not neglect this important resource. His soldiers were relieved by the zeal and diligence of the people, who watched while they slept and laboured while they reposed. He accepted the voluntary service of the bravest and most indigent of the Roman youth, and the companies of townsmen sometimes represented in a vacant post the presence of the troops, which had been drawn away to more essential duties. But his just confidence was placed in the veterans who had fought under his banner in the Persian and African wars, and although that gallant band was reduced to 5,000 men, he undertook, with such contemptible numbers, to defend a circle of 12 miles against an army of 150,000 barbarians. In the walls of Rome, which Belisarius constructed or restored, the materials of ancient architecture may be discerned, and the whole fortification was completed, except in a chasm, still extant between the Pincian and Flaminian gates, which the prejudices of the Goths and Romans left under the effectual guard of St. Peter the Apostle. 18 days were employed by the besiegers to provide all the instruments of attack which antiquity had invented. Fascines were prepared to fill the ditches, scaling ladders to ascend the walls. The largest trees of the forest supplied the timbers of 4 battering rams. Their heads were armed with iron. They were suspended by ropes, and each of them was worked by the labour of 50 men. The lofty wooden turrets moved on wheels or rollers, and formed a spacious platform of the level of the rampart. On the morning of the 19th day,